We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The margin of error in the NFL is shorter. It's 7-8 plays a game tops are what differentiates winning from losing. And everyone in the league in the division got better. So maybe instead of 7 or 8, it's 4 or 5 plays that are going to make the difference in every single game.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel, all over social media, or our morning newsletter, KCSN Daily, dedicated to your Kansas City Chiefs. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
What's up, Chiefs Kingdom? Welcome into 21 Questions, a podcast by KCSN subscribers for KCSN subscribers, as you guys get to ask us all the questions that we get to answer here. And I'm joined with creator, founder, CEO, extraordinaire, czar, BJ Kissel of KC Sports Network. BJ, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. And speaking of czar and all those things, Tucker, we can't forget to mention our presenting sponsor of 21 Questions, and that is McAdoodles. And we had said all last year that the goal was to bring a McAdoodles to Kansas City, and there is a McAdoodles coming to Kansas City. There's one coming to Lee Summit, maybe more in the future, and we will be doing a live show from the Osage Beach McAdoodles later this month. More information on that later, but it's always good to see you. It's not like I don't talk to you like 6 times a day anyway, and now we get to do it answering some other people's questions instead of our own.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be good. Now, Craig was supposed to be doing this episode, but Elon Musk got a little busy, needed Craig's help. So he called on Craig. Craig couldn't be here. Craig had to go to the moon, I guess, and there's no Wi-Fi up on the moon, and I might need him to come to my house and fix the Wi-Fi because it's been incredibly frustrating so far. So we'll get this going here, and there are some Craig-specific questions. We'll just glance over. We'll just, like, not answer those and just have Craig on next week is what the plan will be, sure. So Zach Eisen asks, who's the most impressive player you saw at camp who is on the bubble, BJ?
Ooh, who's on the bubble? Ooh, that threw a wrench right at the end of that question. I wouldn't say he would have been on the bubble, but you look at the running backs group, and we've been talking about him. Charles Goldman's going to write about him later today on our Substack newsletter. But Isaiah Pacheco, the 7th-round rookie running back, we knew that he was one of the most athletic, fast, quick running backs. We had a chance to talk with him out at the Shrine Bowl when we were out in Las Vegas last January. And it wasn't anything negative about Isaiah Pacheco other than the fact that he was a rookie 7th-round pick. And even the draft or the round doesn't really matter, but you're talking about a rookie running back coming into a room that's got, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's going to be the guy, regardless of how people, some Chiefs fans think about him, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be the guy for this season. And then you've got Ronald Jones, who they signed, who's got some juice. He's only 25 years old, which blows my mind when I see that. And then Jerick McKinnon, who provided a little spark in the playoffs for the Chiefs last year with, 350 yards from scrimmage in their 3 playoff games. So, you know, those 3 guys right there. And generally, over the last several years, the Chiefs have only kept 3 running backs plus a fullback in Michael Burton. So just from a pure number standpoint, unless one of those top three guys wasn't going to be on the team, I thought Isaiah Pacheco was going to be fighting for the ability to make this roster. Talked about that on KCSN Update, and then Dave Tove gets up the next day and says he's our number one kick returner. So Isaiah Pacheco would be my guy, and he made the play of camp so far on that wheel route. During camp yesterday that, you know, our guy, Eddie got a video of, out at camp. So Isaiah Pacheco would be my answer. What about you, Tuck?
Yeah, I really like, Pacheco. I think on the bubble, you start looking at the wide receiver room too. That one's going to be full of a lot of bubble guys. And Darius Fountain, I think, even got mentioned by Dave Tobe. So that's really good, for him. And I think that there's been some conversations there. Jody Fortson, I wouldn't necessarily call him on the bubble either, but he looked really good before he got the quad injury. I think kind of people kind of forgot, you know, what he did before he had that season ending injury. Man, Leo Chanel's look really good. Elijah Lee, I know that there's been some talks about Chanel Lee in that starting position there, and I really like what Lee's been able to do. And there's guys too like DiCaprio Bootle. I think that's a guy that's on the bubble, and I think he's been able to play himself into a special teams role at least, and he's been able to show that he is, you know, for lack of a better term, competent on defense, that they can keep him on the roster and keep him to be a special teams player.
Yeah. Dave Tobe's going to make the difference. And that's why you love when Dave Tobe talks to the media, and the media knows he's going to tell you. You're going to get more actual information from Dave Tobe than probably any other presser for the Chiefs during training camp. Dave's awesome. So it's great to get like that information out there and know where guys actually stand.
Absolutely. And here's kind of another question here. Who are you most excited to watch in the first preseason game? For me, it's Matt Bushman. I know that tight end room I just talked about it is crowded. There's a lot of guys in there, but Matt Bushman could help make himself a team. All 31 teams are watching these games. And now it's a tryout for him, and he's made some great catches, made some great plays. I think it's kind of like the running back room. I just think there's too many cooks in the kitchen for Matt Bushman to make this team. So we'll see how that goes. Who are you looking forward to, BJ?
Well, Pacheco would answer, but we got to mix it up a little bit here. Leo Chanel. I mean, he's my guy on draft night. You know, he said, like, this guy's going to be a fan favorite. You watch his highlights, you see how he plays, and you know what makes Arrowhead so special. I mean, that mystique of Arrowhead was built off of defense and guys making plays on defense. No offense, Patrick Mahomes, the offense, that's amazing. But nothing gets Arrowhead louder than a third and long situation, and when your defense is out there setting the tone. And Leo Chanel is a tone setter. And the way that – I don't know if there's a guy that I've seen – not that I'm any kind of an expert, from all the highlights and all the tape of college guys we've watched, you get within 5 yards, his ability to close on a ball carrier and bring him down is as fast as I've seen from a player at his position. You know, we put out that video on our Twitter account of him coming down on Juju Smith-Schuster on a little zone short throw, and it looked like he was ready to hit. And I'm excited to see that, because the first few times that he lays one of his hits, you know, that, you know, kind of made his college career, made, you know, the death row on the arm and all of that kind of thing. First time he makes a couple of those plays coming downhill and loses his mind, Chiefs fans are absolutely going to fall in love with that dude. So I'm here to see it during the preseason. And to your point, you know, him and Elijah Lee, two different kind of players, two different chess pieces for Steve Spagnuolo, and similar to the, you know, the people talk about the wide receiver room. You want a basketball team, you know, you want a point guard, a power, you want different styles. Same thing on defense. You don't want all of your outside linebackers, everybody to fit the same exact mold. You want to be able to play matchups each week. And Elijah Lee does that. I watched him in high school, watched him obviously in college at K-State. It's awesome to see a hometown kid, a great kid, you know, get his opportunity, and him and Leo Chanel, like, those are two different nice pieces for Steve Spagnuolo.
Yeah, 100%. Next question here from Bruce in the Fort. Is anyone a trade candidate in the wide receiver room? I don't think they're going to make a move there necessarily. Would I be surprised? No. But I think that the wide receiver room, I don't think they're going to be trading anyone away. What do you think, BJ?
I don't know what other team. That you're not trading MVS. You're not trading Juju. Right. I don't think they're going to trade McColl. And I don't – obviously not trading Sky Moore or anything like that. So. Right. If Josh Gordon goes off in the preseason, maybe we haven't really seen a lot from him so far, but we know the talent is there. So if he flashes that, could somebody maybe give up a really late round pick? Maybe. But if he doesn't go off, they're going to sit back and be like, I don't think he's going to make the roster. Why would we give up a resource or a draft pick for them? And so it's kind of the same with all the other guys on the team. The only position you could really see a team wanting to give up, you know, compensation for, I'd say, is running back. You know, if a couple, some team lose a couple running backs and Jerick McKinnon sitting there or Derek Gore, not that he's shown a ton, you know, showed some juice last year, but he's also 27 years old for a running back. So I don't see it happening at either one of those positions, especially wide receiver, just because I'm not sure other teams wouldn't just wait to see who gets cut around the league.
Yeah, I think that's kind of it too. You know, who can you really give up to get something back? Who are other teams going to be wanting to get? And you mentioned those top end guys. Those would be really the only guys. No offense to, you know, any other guy on the team, but teams aren't going to give up assets for a guy who is, you know, you're talking about 45 man on the roster, you're getting close to the 50th man on the roster. So that's just what I'm thinking here. Zach Smyrna asks this. BJ, this is a question for you.
Okay.
On a scale of dumbass lap around Arrowhead in a bus to actual Super Bowl victory parade, how triumphant will BJ's victory lap on Frank Clark the person be if he completes his redemption arc this season?
I don't hold Frank's production on the field to the way that I feel about him and what he's brought to the Chiefs. It's probably the most succinct. I don't think I've ever said it that way, but that's how I feel. I had a chance to be around him, and I'm not trying to be like that. I know him. I don't. I am hanging out with him. I'm not texting him. It's not like that. I just saw what he was about when he was there. I saw the things that he played through, and I had seen it for the years past and other people that had played, you know, the same position. And just, you talk about leadership in different ways. I was fortunate enough to get that perspective, just like Mitch Holtis and Matt McMullen and everybody who's in that locker room gets to see that perspective. And not that Frank doesn't have his stuff, and I'm not going to speak to the things that he spoke about, 'cause I don't know about those things. I saw the man that was helpful to his teammates, that was, you know, kind and gracious with the media. I'd be really surprised if even the media would say anything, because Frank will stand there and answer your questions. If he plays bad, he'll stand there in the locker room and answer your questions. And that's not always the case. And I respect that, because I know it's not always that way. And so my victory lap won't be for me being right. It'll be for the shit that that dude has been through in his life, not just with the Chiefs, but in his life. To go out there and find success and to go from the highest of highs, get paid, get traded, come be a part of the Super Bowl championship team, and then struggle for a lot of different reasons and a lot of different ways. And then to come back from that, the redemption story is awesome, but it's more for the person than, you know, the production that he has out on the field, because I'll respect what he brought and what I saw from him when I was around him. So everybody's entitled to their opinion. I get it. But that's a guy, same thing with Tyron. Like, I saw with those two dudes coming into the locker, Anthony Hitchens the same way. They changed everything on that side of the ball as much as, you know, Patrick Mahomes did from a leadership perspective.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what Frank Clark has in store this year. He looks good. Looks real, real lean, real
skinny,
healthy.
Man.
Oh, it's going to be exciting to see. You already saw his speed rush he had on Roderick Johnson on one-on-ones the other day. So get to see that speed, and I'm excited to see that translate to the field. Isaac Hugh, he asked, is there any hypothetical reason for us out-of-staters to be in KC in October right around the Bills game?
Who asked that question? Tucker.
His name is Isaac.
Uh-huh. Yes. I didn't. There will be a reason if you are a golfer to want to be here around that time. We have some more information coming out later. Not quite ready for that yet. But yes, if you want to come in town for the Bills game, I'd recommend coming in on Saturday if you like to golf.
Interesting. Back to the football questions here.
Uh-huh.
Cote
19. Great question from Isaac. You guys just can't just wait for some things to come. I'm getting very impatient.
Listen, this is the first time I've been in the Discord all week.
Kent Isaac Swanson.
Cote 19, who starts on the defensive line week one and who rotates in? Listen, I'm no Craig Stout. I realize that, but I'm going to give this my best crack at it. I think you got to have Frank Clark. We've seen a lot of Mike Dana on the inside. So it wouldn't shock me if you go with, you know, Frank Clark, Mike Dana, Chris Jones. I'm gonna say it, BJ. George Karlaftis.
Yeah.
Opening drive starter. George Karlaftis on that other side.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't. And you've got a physical presence like Karlaftis out there. You can put somebody a little quicker on the inside with Mike Dana. They're going to move those guys around. I don't know if it matters who starts, because three plays later, they're rotating the next guys in. Carlos Dunlap will be in there. And I think in talking with Brandon Thorne, he was mentioning, and I thought it was really, really insightful information from Brandon when we spoke about, you know, he played 35% of the snaps, Carlos Dunlap, last year, which isn't unheard of. Most defensive linemen aren't playing more than 50-60% of the snaps anyway. And so it's not a knock to say that, you know, he's playing 35%. But when Carlos Dunlap spoke with the media, he talked, I mean, he basically spoke to that point. I don't know if that was from the negotiations with his agent and Brett and the money based on snap count and usage, and, you know, snap count equals value in a lot of ways with some of those contract discussions. How much are you out on the field? Now, Carlos Dunlap was very effective when he was out there about 35% of the time. So is he going to play more than 35% of the snaps? Is he a third down pass rushing specialist? How do they kind of, you know, break up those snap counts and those packages? They're just Steve Spagnuolo and, you know, those position group coaches. But I don't see Carlos Dunlap necessarily starting the first game out there, because I don't think that's necessarily his role. I think Karloftis will play more snaps, but Karloftis, based on what we've seen, there's no reason to think that he is not impressing upon the already high expectations that people had for him. This dude is fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. And you saying the percentage of snap counts made me want to look this up. Last year, Mike Dana had 47% of the snaps. Alex Okafor had 41%. So if he comes in and fills that Alex Okafor of the 41%, George Karloftis comes in at 47%. I think that they're sitting real, real good in that situation. You know, other DNs, you had Damone Harris with one, and, you know, Josh Kendall with four.
What was Jones?
Chris Jones was 56. Frank Clark was 58.
Was that the highest?
Yes.
Frank at
58. Yep.
That's crazy. And I used to, not to go off tangent here, but he's talked to Nick Leckie about that all the time. Cause, and even I've talked to Mitch Schwartz when I was at the Chiefs about how, as an offensive lineman, you have to save your energy. You can't go balls to the wall in every single play, cause you don't get a break. Whereas on the defensive side, those guys can go as hard as they want, because three plays they're tired, the next guy's coming in, unless, you know, the offense goes no huddle, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, 58% of the snaps for the most snaps played, percentage wise. It's crazy when you think about how many guys you need to rotate. So it doesn't matter who's starting. Those guys are coming in and out all the time. Same thing on the offense. Depends what personnel package you're in as far as who's technically getting the start.
All right, here we go. Next question from Dustin. If you could only go to one game this season, which would it be? And I assume he's talking about a regular season game, but I'm going to Maddie answer this and just say the Super Bowl.
You're just trying to make this a quick one.
Yeah,
I was going to bring a game at Arrowhead. I'd say Cincy. I'd go to Cincy and go to that one, because beat us twice, ended our season. Everybody's still pretty pissed. If you really think about it, I mean, we were in Las Vegas at the Shrine Bowl watching the game with a bunch of Chiefs fans at the Chiefs bar out there, and that was miserable. And so that pretty much put a damper on about the next few days when we were out there, and we were out there a long time. But to me, going to Cincinnati, they're a team that they fixed their offensive line. This offseason, they put some resources into that, and that was really the one area of the team among anything else that really struggled. Joe Burrow is a stud. Ja'Marr Chase is arguably one of the top three receivers in football right now. I don't think that's a hot take for anyone who's watched what that dude has done. And so they're absolutely going to be a problem, and going into their house and, you know, kind of reestablishing ourselves as the top team in the AFC. You need to do that. I mean, Chiefs fans are going to think we're the best team in the AFC. We can, but the one team that has it on us that can say it, and there's nothing you can do, is Cincinnati. They beat us when it mattered. And so going to their house and beating them, even though it's the regular season, that's the one I'd want to go to.
Yeah. I mean, they went to their house last year and when they played them, and the game ended this. The way that those two games, the script that those two games followed was so bizarre in how similar they were, where the Chiefs dominated the first half. Patrick Mahomes looked really good. The second half, just nothing happened.
If there's one game that Carlos Dunlap may pay more than 35% of the snaps, my money would be on that one, because he spoke about it during his media that he knows that they're on the schedule, and that meant something to him. He spent 10 years there. So,
You know, that's gotta mean something. I'm excited to see what he can do. We haven't really seen him in full pads yet. And, you know, I don't know if he'll play much in the preseason, but here's a question about the preseason from Mike Chanel, the Fields Denny. Does QB1 get a little extra run in the first couple preseason games to let him get live reps with the new skill players? That's an interesting question.
I don't know if it's more reps, but there may be more plays that are designed or scripted to answer that particular question. I don't think it necessarily has to be more snaps or more time as much as it is the plays that are called are going to fit more of that. Whereas if you had four brand new offensive linemen, you might throw some more running plays in there. So those guys get used to each other in live reps for the same point, get some more passing plays, quick passes, some of those zone drops, so that reading the leverage, some of those check routes, option routes that the receivers run, where you need to make sure that your quarterback and your receiver see things the same way as the play develops, because that's how a lot of these, you know, concepts are run within the Chiefs offense. So you want to see that they can read things and see the same things together, which is why them going down to Texas is so important, to just get on the same page and talk through how they see things and reading where the linebacker safeties, when to sit, when to cross into the next window, those kinds of things. But yeah, I don't know if it'll be more snaps necessarily, as much as it is just being really intentional with the plays that are called.
Yeah, a more quality over quantity type of play. So we'll see. Anything that Andy Reid says in the press conference regarding preseason games too, he's like, "Oh yeah, they'll play a series or like they'll play a quarter. Just cut it down to a series. Just like cut it in half." That's what I've learned.
Especially if they go down and score. I think I've heard other teams have done that before too, where it's like, "Hey, you'll get a half, and then the second quarter they'll be like, "Hey, if you score a touchdown on this drive, you're done." Yeah. It's like, "All right, let's go get a touchdown." And they go talk with Matt McMullen or Kenny Checks, the new sideline reporter for the Chiefs preseason games. So it's great to see from Kansas City, NFL Network. It's awesome.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yes, that is really good. Here's a question. Nick Dahl, who are your favorite K-State players to watch? I think for me, it's going to be Adrian Martinez. I just want to see what he does at quarterback. You got Echo Boydo, another one who's really good. I've learned a lot about K-State by just listening to those guys talk. And then you've obviously got the Big 12 Player of the Year.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm not going to try to pronounce his name.
And Deuce Vaughn. He's called him King Felix is what you call him.
That's he's like Indoke something. Okay, but yeah, I think.
King Felix.
Yeah. Week two game is going to be good. It's going to be a good matchup. It's going to be good for both teams. BJ, who do you think?
That'll be a fun. I'm going to watch that game with you, Tucker. Okay.
Stadium. Too. Yep.
Yeah. Adrian Martinez. I mean, I think you've got arguably guys who are in the conversation for the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year and Deuce Vaughn. Granted, Texas' running back's pretty good while they're still in the Big 12. But you got Deuce Vaughn, who's going to be in that conversation at least. And same thing with King Felix is the preseason Defensive Player of the Year. So, those two are the obvious ones, but then Adrian Martinez is pretty obvious too. But Adrian Martinez, I don't think he's said things to intentionally inflame Nebraska fans, but the way that he's talked about why he came to K-State, and this is the most talented team that he's played on. I'm not saying it's writing checks that he has the cash or not, but it's putting a spotlight on him even more than just being a quarterback in general. And K-State, there's a lot of optimism about what K-State can do. I mean, nobody's talking about BB, left tackle, being one of the top three or four left tackles in all of college football. I mean, this guy's a top 2-round draft pick as of right now. So there's a lot of reasons to be excited about K-State, but all eyes are going to be on the quarterback and what they can do. And if he plays well, they could make some noise and make a little run to disrupt some things within that conference.
100%. I think some of my buddies were talking about it. I said K-State, Oklahoma State. That's my Big 12 championship game prediction. So I think that's very realistic. Texas
I'll watch that game with Joel Penfield.
There you go.
Our friend over on the Royal side is an Oklahoma State guy.
Live watch. Dave Foreman asked, would we be concerned that by moving money in Kelsey's contract around, he could be retiring sooner than later? Listen, I think that is a possibility. But BJ, what do you think?
I have no idea. These are the things where you want to grasp at straws and we want to guess on why they did it. It may have just been the fact that Kelsey, I think I read this somewhere, he had never been the highest paid tight end in football.
Right.
Ever. and he's the best tight end to ever play the game. And that is absolutely crazy. And maybe they just had some extra money. The way the salary cap works, that the Chiefs have some brilliant people with Brant and Chris and those guys behind the scenes working on that stuff, that maybe they just wanted to reward a guy that's done everything that you've asked, that's gone about being a professional the way that you've asked, and the way that he invests into the younger guys, much like we're seeing from Frank Clark after practice. Travis has been doing that throughout the years as well. And he's an example for a lot of young guys. And sometimes you just want to keep those guys happy. You want to reward those guys. So that could be it. Or it could be moving some money up because he's not sure if he wants to continue playing. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's not it. We're not going to know. You know, they're not going to come out and say, this is exactly why we did this. But I wouldn't be surprised either way. I strongly believe if his body can hold up, and nobody would know that better than Travis and, you know, the athletic training staff, which the Chiefs have a phenomenal group there with Rick and everyone. But, you know, I think his game translates really well to getting older if his body can hold up, much like we saw with Antonio Gates. Travis Kelce can run a wide stick at 45 years old. Like, he can read a defense, turn one way, make a catch, turn upfield for a few yards. That translates. Does he want to continue playing? I have no idea. That guy could probably make more money not playing football right now in media than he could playing the game. Chiefs go win a Super Bowl. Not going to blame him for walking away. He's the greatest tight end to ever play. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's going to get more money taking care of his body, flying around, talking to the media, and all the fun stuff that he can do. That dude is going to be a fun to watch when his playing career is over. Biased. I hope it's not that soon. I want to see him shatter every record that there is out there. But yeah, that guy's given everything he has, and I'll keep sporting him before and after he does it.
I think that was kind of the thing, is that he went on kind of a media tour. I don't know if you can necessarily call it a media tour, but he was in front of the media a lot this year, kind of planting some seeds, is what people are trying to connect some dots here, maybe some dots that don't need to be connected. But I definitely think that, like, you know, his body's not getting any younger. So it's definitely a possibility, and it's something to think about here. Let's see here. Oh, this is a good one from Will Yoder. Can we get KCSN death row shirts with Chenal, Gay, Bolt, and maybe Brian Cook on them?
We'll get there. We have some news coming out on Saturday about t-shirts. So if you're hanging around whenever this podcast comes out, we've got some news coming out on Saturday, and stay tuned.
That's a professional tease. Pro tease right there. Okay.
Tucker, really depends when you post this episode.
It's gonna be out on
Friday. You've got a lot going on.
But yeah. Okay, let's see. Let's do a couple more here. Let me pick out some good ones. Here, this one also is from Abe Foreman. Hall of Fame guys on the team right now: Andy Reid, Mahomes, Kelce. Those are locks. I think we can all say that those are locks. He says, call your shot. Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, Juan Thornhill.
Oh man, it's hard for offensive linemen anyway.
It is. It's very hard.
Creed Humphrey is one of the best, if not the best, center in football right now. If he stays healthy and the Chiefs run off a few Super Bowls that he's a part of those guys, that would be the one that I would say the most, just because he's still younger in his career. He's the best at his position, and that's already known with offensive linemen. It's really hard for those guys to get noticed nationally. I think a lot of people have done a good job of talking about Creed, and like it or not, that stuff matters with Hall of Fame voting, especially for offensive linemen. You got to be known. And so of those three, I would say Creed, but Trey Smith's the best draft pick in Brett Veach's tenure, you know, outside of Mahomes and that whole separate conversation that you can have. But Trey Smith's the best draft pick he's made.
He's good. To get him in the sixth round too, it's just like, oh my gosh. I can remember watching him with Duke and seeing him fall, because I think he was projected as like a third round. That was before people really knew about like his blood clot condition, and just kept seeing him fall to the sixth round. I was like, oh my gosh. No, that's great. But here's one from Leighton E44. BJ, what's your take on the basketball rivalry in the KCSN lab group? Do you know about this? Do you know about the pickup basketball rivalry?
I don't. I've heard a little bit about it, but I need some more context, Tucker.
So it was, Kent and I were on 21 Questions. Maddie asked a question that said, game to 21, twos and threes, what's the line between me and Kent? So Maddie and Kent, and I gave Maddie 3 points as favored at 3 points. Maddie was offended because he thought I should have gave him more. Kent was offended because I should have favored Kent, obviously. So they all think that they can beat each other in one-on-one basketball.
I think Maddie just beat him up. You know, he just get down to the block. And but Kent's going to be quick. And Kent just seems like a guy who's just going to drain threes. Yep. I mean, he's a college quarterback. He's accurate. Like, I can see Kent just getting Maddie a little tired, maybe. Maybe those heavy defensive line legs from back in the day for Maddie start to catch up to him a little bit. But let's be honest, like, Maddie works out more than everybody else. So Kent may get pretty winded pretty quickly. So that's a fascinating thing. But I don't think your reasoning should have offended anyone. And to be honest, there's only one way to find out. So maybe
next
it's
time we're in
KC,
Maddie has already said he's buying a basketball and they're going to the nearest basketball court. And
we should live stream this. We're going to live
stream.
We
really should.
We just got to get a hard internet line. Write that down, Tucker. Let's figure that out.
Yep, I'm on it. Okay, there's a few more here. We're jumping around because there's a lot of questions this week.
We'll just do rapid fire. Let's try to get to as many as we can.
Okay, here we go. I like this one. Matty J, any new offensive packages this year in camp versus in years past? Yeah, Mecole Hardman was in the Wildcat. So, I mean, that was kind of exciting.
We not seen that?
Maybe not with Mecole, but I think we've seen Wildcat.
I think Sky Moore moving around, doing different things with him and his skill set, Pacheco. But there are hundreds of Andy Reid design plays that we haven't seen. One former player told me there was like 17 variations off one formation on a screen pass. It's like those tight end screen, like 17 variations, and we've seen like four. Mm-hmm. So it might be new to us, but it's not new to the guys who have been repping it.
This one's from Cote 19. Who leads the team in sacks at the end of the season? I'm going to stick my flag in Chris Jones. That's the dude who's been leading the team in sacks. Because if you got guys come from the outside, they got to step up. Chris Jones will be right there. That's my reasoning.
I'm going to go with George Karlaftis.
Let's go.
I am going to go with George Karlaftis. And this is Frank Clark has earned some respect around the league. He comes out and is playing really well. He's going to get some attention. We know Chris is getting a lot of attention. And mine is purely off of that dude can get after the quarterback. And if you have to kind of pick your poison, I think they're going to challenge the young guy and then tell some veteran offensive tackle, you've got the young guy one-on-one. And so I'm going to go with George Karlaftis. I don't think it's going to be a lot. I think it's going to be spread around. I don't think he's getting like 16 sacks, but if you're telling me which guy is going to have 10 with a couple other guys around 7 to 9, I would say George Karlaftis is going to have 10 because a lot of his sacks too are second, third effort. And with Chris, in his awareness, spatial awareness, you know, field awareness of where the ball's at, I could see him being the beneficiary of a lot of pressures and hurries from Chris Jones and company.
Double-digit sacks would have got him number one in the team last year. So Chris Jones with 9 led the team. I believe Frank Clark was second with 4 or something.
Maybe 4.5.
Four and a half. Okay. I've looked at that number a lot recently, and I don't know why that I've looked at that list.
I know that Carlos Dunlap 6 sacks would have been second on the team. And we had 31 as a team, which was dead. 31 on the team, which was dead last in the AFC and 29th in the NFL.
I think we had 13 different players record a sack too. 14 if you count half sacks. But there's also
I think Leo Chanel is going to have at least 5.
That's a question that Maddie and I had a couple weeks ago, like how many people are going to record a sack. And I think that like there's a possibility where you're looking at 20. That's a lot of people. Zach, easy content, Faux McGorkin. He asks, who will be the first person to throw a touchdown pass to Mahomes? I'm going to say Mecole Hardman. Okay. That also works.
I just need to see that. And I think
that'd be awesome.
That we've seen Kelce in the Wildcat on the mm-hmm. goal line, and we know we could throw the ball a little bit. We'll see.
It's like the Poe play where he just does a little jump shot. I could see that exact play happening.
Bloated Tebow pass.
Yeah. Can the Chiefs D get to the middle of the pack in sacks this year? This is from No Chicken Tonight, which is 40. Can they get 40 sacks as a team? We were just talking about sacks. I thought this was a good question to throw in here.
Yeah, they had 31 last year, and they struggled, and they've brought in guys that can get after. I mean, between Karlaftis, we just talked about Leo Chanel or Carlos Dunlap, and not that we didn't have guys last year. Frank's better, back healthy. Chris is going to be motivated. So, and he's got help around him. There's more guys who can get after the passer, which helps everybody. So yeah, I don't think getting 9 more sacks with all the moves that they've made, as bad as they struggled last year, is completely out of the question.
This one's from Just DRK. Another sack question. We just can't stop talking about sacks. Over under 27.5 sacks between Frank, Chris, Carlos, and George. That's 4 guys getting 27.5 sacks. You're better at math than I am. That'd be 7, right?
Yes, Tucker. Yes, that's a good line. I'll say
that is
over,
a really good line. Yeah.
I'll say over. Because I think George Karloftis will end up with like 10. And I can see Frank getting 8. And so when you're talking about Leo Chanel getting 5, that's what, 23. And then Carlos getting, he's going to get his 6 sacks. He's done it for 10 straight years. So yeah, I would say over.
Yeah, I like it. All right. Couple more here. This one, you don't have to answer this question. I just want to read it because it's from Christian Gumminger. Would Lightning McQueen buy car insurance or life insurance? That's a good question. I think the Casey Current tweeted that out. So shout out to them.
This, we should do an entire podcast on this.
I don't think we have enough time on this podcast.
I think it's life insurance.
I think it is too. But maybe he needs both. Extended warranty, maybe? I don't know. Mike Denny, is it really easy for us to get hyped about the team saying they will make huge leaps in training camp? Or it's really easy for us to do that. When we consider this year's camp to previous, do we have reason to be encouraged that the defense will legitimately be better? BJ, this kind of goes with your KCSN update that you were talking about yesterday, where you look at the Sky Moore play and you're like, oh, that's a really cool play. But then you're like, wait a second.
Why the hell is the defense?
Yeah.
Shout out I think it's Chiefsaholic, whatever the meme underneath, like, is perfect. Because when I was working at the Chiefs, it was easy because it was like, oh, I'm just going to pray, like, great offensive play. Defense makes an interception. It's not a bad pass. Great defense. Because there's truth in all of it. But yeah, when somebody's that wide open, you don't really know what they're working on or what they're trying to do. There's a lot of games and things that they set up intentionally with some of their play calls. You know, every time, every defense coverage that's called against every offensive play that's called is set intentionally for a reason. Like, Coach Reed knows what the defense is doing. Like, he's scripting plays to see how things work. And so the rest of us are just guessing. That's all any of us are doing.
Right.
And we're not going to know. And that's kind of the fun part, is everybody can disagree and come up with stuff, and people have more information than others just about, you know, defensive schemes in general. But yeah, I would always, you know, just reward the guys who made a good play. I would still do that now. But yeah, there's definitely that, you know, somebody gets completely, if they're doing OLDL one-on-one and the offensive line keeps ending up on his back, like, that's bad. Right. But it's also like, man, that guy's a monster that's running over him. So it's the beauty of training camp. And I think, as I said on KCSN update, I think it just really tells you a lot about yourself.
It does. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think that people are feeling so encouraged about this team because this team is different. You know, there's no Tyreek Hill. It looks a little bit different on the offensive side of the ball. You got Sky Moore. You've got MVS. You have Juju. This is the first time they've really had a revamped offense since Patrick Mahomes came as quarterback. Yeah. I think this is really the first time, and I think that's why people are getting excited about it.
Juju coming out and making the big-time plays that he did really early in camp, even before the pads came on, I think contributed to all of this. If he didn't make those plays, people would still feel optimistic. If you don't feel optimistic about Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and Travis Kelce, regardless of who else is out there, they're going to get guys who can make plays. You put those three guys out there, this offense is going to put up points. When we talk about struggling now, like, oh, I don't know if the offense is going to be, what, are they going to be fifth in the league instead of like first or second? They're still going to put up points. So for me, it's still the defense. It's still the young guys on that defense, the, you know, Brian Cooks, the Josh Williams, like those guys who are going to be out on the field, who are going to be tested. And now you have guys like Russell Wilson who can take advantage of young defensive backs, and they understand how to play this game and they take advantage of it. It's those young guys on defense getting caught up to this game that's going to be the determining factor of how quickly this team starts, because it's going to take some time. Those young guys are going to have some lessons learned early in this season, and you got to give them a chance to develop. And they're not going to come out and play at all pro levels right off the bat. They're going to struggle. They're going to make mistakes. It could lead to some losses, as long as everybody stays healthy by the second half of the season, those young guys have some, you know, NFL experience under their belt. It's going to make all the difference in the world, but nobody should forget that that also comes with mistakes being made. And that could lead to losses because of the margin of error in the NFL is shorter. It's 7-8 plays a game tops are what differentiates winning from losing. And everyone in the league in the division got better. So maybe instead of 7 or 8, it's 4 or 5 plays that are going to make the difference in every single game.
Yeah, totally agree. I think that's a good one to end on. Got to have some optimism going into the end of training camp. Listen, I think we're already over halfway through training camp. There's only a few days left of training camp when they're in St. Joe. They break camp August 18th. First preseason game, the 13th of August, against the Chicago Bears. It's a Saturday noon game, by the way. I looked that up and I was like, whoa, that's a weird time for a game. But okay, anyway, get you ready for college football. Because you're going to see a lot of college players out there on Saturday. So make sure you're sticking tuned to what we're doing at KC Sports Network. We'll have something for you for that post game as well against the Chicago Bears. As always, thanks to our partner at McDoodles. You can find anything from Holiday Distillery at McDoodles as well. So make sure you go support the people who support us. McDoodles, they do great work. I went down to the Osage Beach location. If you're going down to the lake, that's where you have to stop. That is a good location there.
And for McDoodles, we can just put it out there. If you're going down to the shootout on August 27th that weekend, stop by the Osage Beach McDoodles and come say hi. May have something for you. But we will be down there recording live a 21 questions episode. I don't think we could do that without Craig. Craig, he will definitely be there for that one, as he is a McDoodles supporter long before the rest of us learned a lot about McDoodles. But yes, they're coming to Kansas City, so everybody's going to know about them soon.
It's blacked out from his schedule from Elon, so Elon cannot schedule him on that day. So we appreciate you listening to 21 Questions. We'll be back next week with another full slate of questions. Until then, we'll talk to you later.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.